Hello and welcome to Home to Her, the podcast that's dedicated to reclaiming the lost and stolen wisdom of the sacred feminine. I'm your host, Liz Kelly, and on each episode, we explore her stories and myths, her spiritual principles, and most importantly, what this wisdom has to offer us right now. Thanks for being here. Let's get started. Hey, everybody, and welcome to today's show. So I've been holding an inquiry for myself for quite some time now. And to be honest, I'm probably going to be holding it for as long as I'm alive. And it's this: how might I make my life a prayer? How can I make my life a prayer? So some days this has felt easier than others. Let's say pre-pandemic times when I was able to get away for a long weekend of spiritual retreat or go away with girlfriends for a while. But on other days when I'm breaking up fights between my kids or cleaning up the living room for what feels like the millionth time, not so much. I don't know that there's an easy answer to that inquiry. However, when I look at the beautiful life's work of my guest today, I see some inspiration in how I might be able to experience all of life as a prayer, which is why I'm so honored to welcome Jyoti Ma to the show. Jyoti is an internationally renowned spiritual teacher who has dedicated her life to cultivating projects that demonstrate ways of life that honor the earth and all peoples. She is the grandmother vision keeper of the Center for Sacred Studies and the co-founder of Kayumari, an international community for healing and spiritual seeking. Jyoti was also instrumental in organizing the International Council of 13 Indigenous Grandmothers, as well as the Black Hills Unity Concert to promote a greater understanding of Indigenous peoples among the general public. And she's the founder of The Fountain, whose mission is to restore an economic model that is based on reciprocity and collaboration and guided by nature and the sacred. She has devoted her life to facilitating the development of alliances between individuals who are the guardians of Indigenous culture and traditional medicine ways. Jyoti is also the author of several publications, including the book, An Angel Called My Name. And she is joining me today from her home in the Bay Area of California. Jyoti, thanks so much and welcome to the show.
Oh, well, thank you for having me. Thank you for the good work you're doing in this moment in time.
Oh, thank you. And likewise, I've been so excited to have this conversation with you. I just been reading up on you. I'm like, wow, she's doing this and she's doing this and she's doing this. It's quite impressive. So we're going to have a lot to talk about.
Well, let me reframe that a little bit and say the mother is doing this and doing this and doing this. And I'm quite busy trying to be her arms and legs to walk it out.
Beautiful. Yes. Beautifully put. So there's so much that I want to talk to you about, but I often like to start with guests and just getting a little bit of understanding about their background, and especially when we talk about the sacred feminine, what your exposure might have been to that or your experience of that as a child. So I wondered if you'd be okay just starting with that and just talking to us a bit about your religious background as a child and what you were exposed to, and you know, if there was anything that you knew at all about the mother at that time.
Well, that's a very good question. I'm my 73rd year, and so I'm a grandma, and I'm a girl that was raised in the South. I was born, ironically, and my mother put my feet on this earth for the first time in the Black Hills of South Dakota.
Oh, wow.
Kind of fascinating. Because if you know a little of my story, you know that I've done a lot of work in these last couple of decades with the Great Sioux Nation through the guidance and the companionship of Loretta Afreda Bear Cook, and now doing so much work around our sacred sites because of all that work. So the Creator had a plan for my life.
Wow.
Way back then, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's more to that story, because at my age, you've got lots of stories in the But let me circle back to being that girl in the South, and being my age tells you something about the history, what was unfolding there.
Yes. And I do, I just want to say I'm a fellow Southerner. I grew up in Georgia, so I can, yeah. And that's all my family's from the South as well. I can relate. But yes.
Girls were the main discipline and principle, as I remember growing up, was little girls are seen but not heard. That was our instruction.
Yes.
And the world was a very different place back in those days. I'm so happy that in my lifetime, while I still have my skin on, I can really see some of the healing that's going on in our nation around the world right now about racism, and what that disease has caused and the pain that it's brought. And the awakening that it's bringing us into, you know.
Yeah.
So with all of that said, being that young girl in the South, I remember early on, my mom and I had a difficult relationship. And so when I could, I was living in the Dallas-Fort Worth area at that time. And it's very flat terrain, mostly a little bit of roly hill, but mostly it's really flat. And it has these amazing willow trees that kind of look weepy, you know, they drop down and they make a little house inside because it's very private. It's like a curtain going through God's curtain. Mm. So many times I would find myself, I had this willow tree and I could go there and I would, this arm of the willow would be like an arm of the mother, and I would sit there and read my books and I would talk and Jesus would come to visit with me. Now, I didn't know Jesus was anybody but this wonderful person that was my friend and would come and tell me things and would teach me how to go flying with the clouds and give me all these stories and share these things with me. And when I'd run home all excited about something I'd learned that day and try to share it with my family, I got in trouble. I got sent to my room for exaggerating.
Wow.
I learned really quickly that part of my life was not something I could share readily. That wasn't accessible for me. But I think about those times so much over my years as I've grown, and Spirit has really taken my life to be used in the way that it needs to be used. I think about those moments when I was curled up in the arm of my mother, and that I work so strongly for her now because of that love, that compassion, that comfort, and that nourishing that she gave me when I was young. In fact, I remember getting on my bicycle, and there was this little chapel where I could run to, and I could run in the door, and I could talk to Jesus there. And he would tell me things because I had this relationship with him. But one day I rode my bicycle, I went to open the door of this little chapel, and it was locked. It's when the churches all started locking their doors, afraid of theft. And I really, when I look back, we unconsciously locked God away from ourselves about that same time.
Wow.
And kind of went on a path that took us away from the Spirit that lives in each of us, and away from that relationship with our nature, and therefore the nature and the relationship we had with Mother Earth, who provides life for us all here. So that's what brought me up. That's what taught me. But it also is the place that seeded me with things, because there was things that I noticed there that were happening in the South that I just couldn't understand. And when I try to ask my dad about it, he would tell me, don't ask such questions. This will get you in trouble. And it had to do with the bigotry of the South and the history of the South. I just didn't understand. I didn't understand it. I didn't understand the rules. They didn't match inside of me.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what kind of started me down the path with Creator. But I would come to learn how to close it down, and how to be quiet about things that would be shown to me until I suppressed it and pushed it so far down that I really closed the door on it for a while in my life, and grew to be, to do the things that made you successful in this Western world. And I, and I'm also a woman where, you know, I was excited when we burned our bras. I came through that awakening process, but I was a woman of the South, a young woman with small children, and some of my friends died because we couldn't meet together as a circle of women there. We started having, without getting in trouble or some beaten, there was such a threat to women coming together in circle. So we started selling Tupperware so we could come together as women and buy dishes for the kitchen. And that was perfectly fine. A lot of things came out of the weaving of that story into my life as well, as I would grow and then start my work, in the streets of Texas for 13 years, working with children that were arrested and called delinquent when really they were really warriors of life that had survived horrendous things. And there was something so strong in the spirit of who they were that it started to wake that place up in me, and then the door started to crack open. And when my father passed away, I had a near-death experience with him. He left his body, I left mine. Mm. And way before people were talking about that bright light, but there it was in his room, in the corner of his hospital room, and I watched him walk into that light, and then his body sat up in bed, came very front in my face, and then relaxed and fell down. And for the first time, like so much of the construct that had been put around death, and therefore when you take that pin out of it, the whole house of cards falls down, because reality has been constructed in the West on fear of death. Fear. It's been constructed on a lot of fear in the last recent several hundreds of years. So, you know, when that happened, many questions started to abound in me, but I tried to talk to my brother about what had happened, but he wasn't ready for that. And that, so I closed it down for 8 years before it would then open itself to me. And when the cork got pulled out of the bottle, the genie jumped out and she was not going back in again. And a great Kundalini awakening took hold of me that I walked through for 13 years. And that brought me to the arms of the Great Mother and the real understanding. Understanding is means it's still in my mind. So I would rather say that there was I felt into it. There was a knowing that of the feminine that arrived and embodied itself in me, that has only grown deeper roots in the relationship I have with her. Mm. And in this amazing moment that we're in here, because we're here during the birthing time, you know?
Mm.
Some people, I just saw a quote. I don't remember who said it, so I apologize for that. But it got my attention because a woman on a TED Talk had spoken about, we can look at this as if we're in a tomb or we're in a womb.
Yes, that's Valerie Kaur. I love her. Yes, it's really, really inspiring. And I've probably watched that speech 3 or 4 times now and get all tingly every time I watch it.
I haven't seen it yet. I can't wait to go. I just got it in the email before coming to you, so it got my attention.
It's really powerful. She also did a talk even right before that TED Talk. I think it was New Year's Eve 2016, so right after you know, the last presidential election, where she was part of an interfaith council that was leading ceremony on New Year's Eve. And I think that was the first time she delivered that. And it's just, I'll send it to you. It's electrifying. The whole room just kind of like, whew.
Well, it's interesting. You go poof, like, you know, fireworks went off or something. Because yeah. I think we're in a moment right now that I'm calling the making moment. And a making moment is full of electricity. It's alive. It's radically alive, you know. And we're in one of those moments. The Kogi told us that they're four original peoples out of Colombia that I've worked with now for many years, and they gave us prophecy several years ago that said the ending is falling into the beginning, and the beginning will roll out in 2026. It's important to watch the ending as it falls so you can stay informed, but stay focused on that which is breaking through. And that which will break through in 2026 will be carried by the individuals and the organizations and the movements that are based on original principle of collaboration, reciprocity, heart, unity, and all life is sacred. And that's the foundation of the feminine. So our masculine and feminine are doing this dance to a different tune. The masculine is moving into a place where they want to protect the life makers. So the life makers can be held and catch the vision and the instruction. And the masculine can help us give form to it so it can march through that door into this new dimension that we're evolution is taking us.
Oh, there's so many threads of what you just said that I want to follow them all. So because, you know, we're in this pandemic, and I think it just seems like every day the news is bleaker, frankly. And you referenced the fear already that seems to be the cultural driving force right now. It's what we see in the media. It's palpable. And I wonder if you could say a little bit more. And so I also want to acknowledge that it almost seems like that fear is getting broken down in this area of whether you believe this is happening or not. You know, you either believe in this virus or you don't. But I think there's a deeper conversation that can be had about that fear. And do we have an opportunity, as you referenced, to see something larger here while also respecting the deadly nature of this disease? And I wonder if you could say a little bit more about that. Maybe I'll stop there and see if that made sense. If not, I can add a little bit more.
No, it makes plenty of sense. You know, the Four Original Peoples, some of what they've said to me is that the coronavirus, they call it an old one because it's come here to cleanse us, to purify us, to help us see the fear. Because if we can't see it, we go unconscious. It puts us to sleep. It boxes us in. It keeps our hearts closed down, so we can't hear the intelligence of the heart anymore. And that's what we need to bring forward. That's why I like to say, you know, some of the things that are going on in our politics here in this nation and around the world. There are people that are carrying the poison of our time. You know, it's like homeopathy. Sometimes you have to take the poison in order to get the cure. And when I went to the Jungian Institute, there was something that was said there that caught me and has still got me my attention. It's one of those true teachings. It said the cure is in the ultimate paradox. So we're in a really high cure moment. You know, it's all what we do with our thinking and our mind. How are we going to look at this? You know, when I work with a lot of people that maybe come with terminal illness, and the ones that really embrace what's happened, this is what I got, this is what's happened. And then how will my spirit guide me through this? And those are the ones that, let go of their need to figure it out, or feel victimized by the disease itself, but really empower themselves that they have the solution for it within, and are willing to listen to it and follow it, even when it breaks them out of their normal understanding of what's okay. Because as Einstein said, the solution for our problems will not be found in the box where the problem got made. We have to step out of the box. We have to step we have to come back to ourselves. So this time that we're living in has been prophesied for thousands of years. And those prophecies were given or held by the original people of this planet and the original caretakers of this planet. And so those prophecies, as I've come to know them, as I've walked with prophecy now for over half my lifetime, that those prophecies prepare us for these times. But in the times we're in, they also instruct us with how to walk through these times if we will listen to the instruction. You know, so it's about changing our perception and our attitude towards what we're standing with. If we stay victimized and stay in fear or shame or judgment, right or wrong, then we are not in the box where the solution will be found. We have to step out of that split that lives inside that kind of box and into our wholeness, into our hearts again. And we have to embrace that wholeness so we see the whole picture, not just part of it. That's why that instruction with the prophecy about the ending times, you must watch it to stay informed. So I get up in the mornings and I listen so I stay informed. But it is not the driving force in what I'm reimagining.
Hmm.
And that reimagining space is available to us right now because we are in this moment of cure. And so if I'm going to walk that way, if I'm going to find right direction for where we're going, not only as an individual, I have to listen to some of those original caretakers. When the pandemic stopped all bans on all flights and movements, I was with the Mother Earth delegation of United Indigenous Nations, and we were about to meet in Stockholm, Sweden, for the first time as that delegation. And it's on a walk all on its own. That's another part of the story. But when we couldn't, one of the delegates who's from Aboriginal from Australia, she said, this is the moment the earth is telling us that we need to come back and sit in our zero points. Every single one of us need to declare our own sovereignty. We need to start our own fires again in for ourselves and for our families and for our communities. We need to build that fire bright again. We need to connect with that line that came out of our families back to its original root so we can really feel the sovereignty of the line we stand with as an individual, as a people here. And that was the first work. Then one of the delegates, Louisa Tisch, she's an African priestess.
Yes.
So much more. She's amazing and beautiful poet and playwright, and I mean the long list of things with Louisa. She's a grandmother. She's an honored one and a good friend of mine. Mm-hmm. And she's part of this delegation. And when she did a divining on what is this moment about for us, what she said is the ancestors' hands are on this movement. So we must listen. And we must show up, and this was very interesting, we must show up with our feminine militaristic strategy, she said.
Mm.
And they went on to explain what that meant. That it meant that it was calling in those spiritual beings that have done a lot of their homework and are ready for the service, for their dharma, for their life work. And those individuals are being activated right now because they can maintain an intention even when crazy confusion is spinning around them. And they can sustain a focus that's necessary so that they don't allow themselves to be distracted or pulled off course while the ending is stirring and spinning around them. They can stay fully focused with Mother Earth as she calls what she calls her nation into activation. And that nation includes all peoples, all nations. It includes creation itself. And so what was shown to me is that she unplugged us so we could take this moment to go have this deep, deep self-reflection Yeah. And for me, the coronavirus has been like a truth serum. Whether you want anybody to see your truth or not, it's very visible right now. If we can keep from judging that truth, but just hold the truth, then we will be working with restoring a whole system once again. So I was also shown that when she plugs us back in, there'll be a moment on the planet of recalibration, if you will. A moment when we collectively are going to make a huge, huge choice. And that recalibration will realign us with that original cord to life and source of life, to the Mother Earth herself. And those that are sleeping and are can't wake from it, they might not see that or feel that recalibration, but they'll certainly be affected by it, because we all will be. And then those that are waking will see some of those new forms that are bringing the restoration and regeneration, the recalibration forward. And we'll start to work together in a collaborative, divine weaving of a new tapestry that's got a very different story. Mm. Because we're moving out of what would many of the prophecies spoke about this world we're in right now, is to teach us about separation. And you know, what's also important, I think, for people to realize is that nature, if you watch nature, it shows you everything and brings a depth of understanding to your everyday life if you'll pay attention to nature's teachings. And so one of the teachings is that all life moves through cycles. You know, we're in a summer right now. Now move to fall, then we'll move to winter where everything will go quiet again, and then we'll have a spring moment happen again. Well, our whole beingness here, the earth herself, is going through transformation as well. She's in a transcendent moment, an escalation, if you will, of evolution is moving us into a very new cycle, because she's just finished 26,000 year cycle. In India, when I used to go there to learn, I would do pilgrimages, and many of the ashrams or temples would have on their walls this clock, and it would show this clock from 12 to 1 would be 2,500 years, from 1 to 2, another 2,500 years. And so it would go all around to 26,000 years, because the very last little sliver was dark, and it was called the Kali Yuga. It was when the disintegration process of that cycle was closing itself down, so we could move into the next cycle of 26,000 years. And that's what we're doing right now. This is the Earth's sixth extinction process. So she's been through this cycle of 26,000 years at least 5 times before. So she knows how to do it. Mm-hmm. So if we can really listen to those original people that carry her word so clearly, because the good news is that those original people, many of them have carried this unbroken line from those original times with that original instruction through horrendous stories, through horrendous challenges, through genocides, all the way to stand here now with a line unbroken.
Mm.
That's resilience. And it's at the table of our weaving right now as well. So if we can really allow ourselves to shift our perspectives and put those kind of realignments back in place, then all of a sudden, it's not that we're victim to something. We're here to witness a great moment. And we have an opportunity to participate with it in a way that will help it seed the next generations that are coming behind us. Because the earth is going to be fine. It's really about, can we shake our arrogance enough to realize and be humble enough that she's trying to give us the instructions so we can survive, because we're the endangered species. We're one of them.
Yes, that's so funny. I have not heard that framed in that way, but you're exactly right. Of course, we're an endangered species right now. Wow.
But everything we need is here. And I'm in this, I've got one window into looking at all this. There are many windows, right? If we all let the voices of the many windows speak, we'll get to see the bigger picture, which is part of what you're doing, is giving those people the voice in the different windows so we can see that more wholly, the whole system. Huh? Mm-hmm. So it's a remarkable moment that we're living in, that we are witnessing, that we get to serve. It's a time of completion where old stories need to be forgiven and laid down so we can make a brand new story that is embracing all diversity and empowering the spirit that lives within.
Mm-hmm.
There were some days ago, we've gone through this about 10 day, I don't know if you've heard about the Harmonic Convergence 2020 that was just being held. I was lucky I got to participate in that just a little bit. And so this door to the Star Nation was wide open. And like in the second day of it, somebody sent me an email and there had been a huge light that was seen and recorded somehow way out in the cosmos. And they called it the pulse, that it was a pulse that was coming from the source, and it was coming through the moon and the sun and the earth and through us. And it was a beacon to call us back home. It was a beacon to call us all to the same place we are. Our home is the same, you see. It's about heart. When we're in our heart, we're home. And Mama Earth has a heart. And we're all coming home to that heart as well. You know, at least that's some of what it's been shown to me.
Mm-hmm.
Enlightens my day, inspires, and fires me up, actually, to be really honest.
Mm-hmm.
Because yes. In this moment, there's collaborative energy moving everywhere, and people that would not have spoken in the ways we're talking now, even a year ago, are talking this way now. And we're in those boardrooms and we're in these collaborative exchanges of the currencies we each have been preparing and collaborating and cultivating for 30, 40, 50, 60 years. And now we're here and we're at the same table. And it's time to declare and identify that cord we carry. And as each does that, then we get to see what is getting weaved in the tapestry of a new dawn. The prophecies say, and have been preparing us for that new dawn. But now my elders say, we're standing in it. We're no longer waiting for it. We are standing up in the new dawn.
I was just thinking too, as you were speaking, that we have this beautiful opportunity right now to be, you know, if we're really ending this 26,000 year cycle and we're beginning another one, and we as human beings alive on this threshold have the opportunity to be such valuable ancestors to our descendants, you know, that we navigate this and that we are, you know, stand between those worlds, because I assume another 26,000 year cycle is starting, and that wisdom that we gain, you know, however hard won by navigating through these times, will be very valuable to our descendants.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And very old ones are putting skin on right now, and they're called babies, but they're so old in themselves. I bet you have ones living in your house that way.
I might. Yeah.
You know, you see it in the clarity of these young people that are speaking out, you know, Greta speaking to all of these houses of structure, saying, you know, the house is on fire. What's the matter with you? Why don't you help put it out? We've been sleeping, and now something is disturbing our sleep. And as we come out, we will realize we are in a nightmare. Some were having a nightmare. Others were having divine visitation and presence. But we're all in this together, and it's all working together. to weave that tapestry we're talking about. So I'm not a doomsday person. I really see the splendor in what's birthing itself. You know, when you bring life here, when you birth a baby, it's messy. It's not clean and pristine and, oh, I know what to do and I'm going to do it. We're in the organic moment of birth. And that baby is going to determine what it needs in order to come out. And the process it goes through is all part of its dynamic of becoming a human being. And so it's messy. And we speak sometimes. Or we speak words we wouldn't have spoke otherwise, you know. it just comes in and out of us. It's just, we're an open portal of all kinds of stuff during a moment of birth. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden you move into this state of beingness where life and the presence of life has come to greet you. And there is a union, a moment of union where life pops through. And that's the moment of union right now that many people are holding on this planet. And many, many are. There have been waves of consciousness, waking up waves of people through the generations in strong ways, getting stronger and stronger. And now we're here at that final push moment. And so, yeah, it's like a huge earthquake went off. The tornadoes flew in. The waters went high. All the elements are there to meet this amazing moment of life making itself. That's something to celebrate, huh?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That feels much better than reading the headlines of the New York Times, too, I gotta say.
People ask me, so Jyoti, what can I do? I said, well, adapt your spiritual practice. And the spiritual practice the mother has given at this moment in time that will help us restore the rhythm with that alignment with mother and the mother earth and life itself is to stay in the present moment, to stay fully in the present moment. And when you're there, you can see when your mind wants to conjure up something and run to go see what's coming next. Then you're not in the moment. So touch your heart, update your system, come back to the present moment. Oh, you'll see your mind, it'll run back there. It's going to reflect on the things it regretted or it wished it could have or would have or any of. Touch your heart and come back to the present moment. And then the next thing is in this moment of practice, you've got yourself now where you can stay in that present moment. And then the mother and the divine, they're going to bring to you, Mother, Father, God, they're going to bring to you what you need to study in that present moment. Can you have the courage to embrace it? Maybe it's something that's quite remarkable. Maybe it's something that you know is, whoa, that is going to be intense. I don't know. All my stuff comes up, my little self. I'm not in present moment anymore. I got to go back. So that first line of practice, bring myself back to the moment and then embrace what is in that moment. And it will take me to the next moment. And it will take me to the next moment without my need of expectation or need to know where I'm going. I'm just going to stay in the moment. Mm. And that's the practice that it is. If we can all embrace that right now, it will help us reclaim how we follow life, which is a very different energy and rhythm than when I try to control, manipulate, or navigate life. It calls in different things in me, one versus the other. It's got a different rhythm. It's got a different charge. It's a different study. I don't need to make it right or wrong or good or bad. It's a different study. So that's another place to investigate, just to bring your own awareness into the study.
Mm. Yeah, this is also making me think of something a friend said to me about a year or so ago. We were up on land near Mount Shasta in California, and just a really special place. And we were walking and reflecting, and she said, gosh, our ancestors must have had so much faith. You know, they didn't have all of this information flooding at them, which really, frankly, isn't necessarily helpful a lot of times, right? We can look at data and all of this, but in terms of helping us calibrate, who am I and what should I do? It's not particularly useful, especially we're really seeing that right now in the pandemic, I think, but that the land could tell us. And to your point, the present moment could tell us. And by relying on those things, that's how we get to have faith. Like we know that those things are there.
Well, that's a sacred technology you're talking about.
Hmm.
You know, and again, if you look at the whole system, we get out of balance when we put our blinders on and we looking at just one portion of the whole system and not paying attention to any of the rest of it. Then it goes south on us.
Mm-hmm.
If we can step back and see all of it there, all of it there. You know, it reminds me of the prophecy of the eagle condor.
Mm.
The way that goes, and because of our time, I will just give a brushstroke of it. So I want to be respectful of it as well at this moment. But they say there was a time, you know, before big earth changes came and all the Americas were one piece of land. And then the big earth changes came and the Americas broke apart, leaving that Central America part to connect them. And at that point in time, they said the eagle would take flight and it would start to help us grow our mind, our intellect. And the condor from the south would take flight and it would help us grow and cultivate the heart, the big heart, the love we all carry. And so it would go. And as time would pass, there would come a time when the eagle would almost push out the condor. But at a certain moment, they would change and they would begin to fly together. And at that moment, we were moving towards the threshold of our new awakening. And so the eagle and the condor are flying together. And the mind and the heart are beginning to reconnect to one another so that whole being can be informed. The mind can be the disciplined instrument that it can be to help us forge forward what the heart's intelligence gives direction to. One of my grandmothers on the Council of 13 said the biggest journey of our lives right now was this 14 inches from the head to the heart. There's been some in the Zen practice world that would say when the mind dies into the heart, then we're truly home. So if we can step out of our reality as a black and white, very narrowed experience of self, and allow the colors to come in, the multicolors to come in to the expression of our diversity and that which is dreaming us. I'll tell you something. This is what wants to pop out next.
Mm.
I went to the Jung Institute to study for 3 years. And I went there with this burning question. Is it dreaming me or am I dreaming it? And who really knows? That was my question. And I went to the Jung Institute in Switzerland where all the thinkers, very significant thinkers, live and teach. And I had great opportunities to sit with them and to ask this question. But I never got that, you know, goosebumps all over your body, bells ringing kind of, oh yes, that's aha moment, you know. I didn't come. And I went to Texas after Switzerland and I was there for about a year opening up a house for young adolescent girls that had been challenged by all of life and society particularly. And then I came to live in California. And I was in my first year there, and I was sitting in my living room, and I was meditating one afternoon, and I saw this huge, amazing cosmic feminine eye that filled my entire ceiling. And she had these long lashes, and out of her eye looked like the Milky Way was pouring out of her eye. It was so, I can still see it when I share it with you. It was just, there's no word for it. It was, you just moved into divine presence when this eye was looking at you. And as she would kind of wink, you know, like we do when our eyes move and move the water through our eyes, she would close her eyelids and then they would open again. And each time she did that, I would drop deeper and deeper into a trance place with her. And then all of a sudden I heard this, this little giggle. And she said, "I'm dreaming you." And then she was gone. There was the answer to my question. Because in that moment, I knew that when she woke up, I wouldn't be here anymore.
Wow. I'm letting that sit. Wow, that's pretty incredible. Well,
something to think about. We think realities a certain way.
Yes.
And there's so many different ways reality can be. And so many different levels to access reality.
Yes, that's reminding me of is it a hymn to Kali, perhaps? I don't know. I'd have to go back and look. But it was, were she to close her eyes for even an instant, the entire cosmos would disappear. Something like that. Yeah, or open them. But either way, I suppose. Wow. So I want to ask you a little bit about some of your work, and especially now, you know, I think you've painted this really beautiful picture of the opportunity that's before us. And I'd love to hear you speak a little bit about how that's channeling into the ways in which you're showing up in the world today. So I know that's the fountain and some other initiatives, and I'll just let you take that where you want to take it.
Well, you know, a few years ago, I realized that our community, Kayamari, which you introduced when you introduced me, we founded it 25 years ago, but we were together as a community before that. So about 30 plus years, we've grown our community. And we came together because we wanted to hold intentional spiritual community that stepped out of the box of throwaway society. We didn't see that sustainable. We wanted a different world for our children that were raised close to nature so they could dialogue with nature and have it be a part of their everyday life, have a relationship with nature in that way, and to live close to the earth so we could remember. So that's what started my life mission work, was when that community came together. So right before that, I'd been doing so much work to really hold the awakening of people as they individually were awakening. You know, there's a statement, and I don't remember who said this, but it was years ago when I read it, and it caught my attention. It said, when our souls are strong enough to hold our own numinosity, then and only then will we awaken. Mm-hmm. And so that was really a moment of liberty when that whole thought sat down in my system and I felt that thought, because all of a sudden I had so much tolerance, because it wasn't like good or bad anymore. It was really about conscious and unconscious. And when I'm unconscious, I harm things without knowing it. And when I'm conscious, I may step the wrong way and cause a moment of harm, but I'm going to wake myself and go, "Whoa, I am so sorry. Let me correct that." You know, and that's how life moves itself and evolves. And so all but for the grace of God, I'd still be unconscious. Because you can't make somebody wake up. You can't shake them awake. Yeah. Life, will shake them awake when their soul is strong enough to hold their own numinosity. Huh? So I was helping and midwifing, if you will, those that were awakening for many years. So as I began to look at this cord that the mother had been cultivating through myself, my family, our community for all these years, I started to see there was a statement she was making. First, wake them up. Then create and come back to community life that's based on those original principles. And where prayer and ceremony honor the sacredness of life every day and instruct that life. And then as we came up and we didn't know what we were doing, but we somehow showed up and stayed in the present moment. So caught the instruction and followed it and moved it on a little further. And then that was in 1995 when the community came together. In 1998 in ceremony, the divine mother came to us and she said, I'm going to hand you one of my most precious baskets. And in this basket, I'm going to put some of my most sacred jewels. Do not change them. Do not mix them. Protect and keep them safe and walk them through the doorway of the millennium. Hand them back to me. I have something we're going to do. Those jewels represent the lines of prayer that go back to the original time. This is our work. We didn't know what that meant when we caught that vision, that presence, really. It was a presence. It marked the mission that she had entrusted us with to carry. And then 9/11 came, and all the ways that we had put together to protect that basket and to protect our lands and the sacredness of our land where we lived in this 160-acre ranch in the Sierra foothills of California, all of that fell down. Patriot Act came in. And we were told we needed to start a church. And so we started the Center for Sacred Studies. And of course, when they said to me, Jyoti, we really got to start a church in order to protect this basket. And I said, a church? Do you know what's in the shadow of the church? There's so much there. You think we're ready for this study? But we were. And then we started going through the process of becoming this church, and the government would ask us questions we had to fill out, you know, like, let me take a picture of your sanctuary. So we were building a house for the mother at the time. So we took a picture of that. It was all done by hand. It was down by the creek bed so we could heal some of what happened when mining took place on this land and they pushed the Miwok off of it. We were really concentrated on healing all of this. And then I wrote them back and I said, well, here's a picture of one that sits on our land, but we're nomadic in nature and the earth is our temple. They never wrote back since then. Then they said, you've got to have ministers. I was not someone that was really gifted with programming or any of these technical things. I had a pushback moment, but she always lets me have my little me self moments and gives me the voice of sternness, which I mean, now it's time. And this, the timing of alchemy, the timing is the essence of alchemy. So I know no more fooling around, needs to be done. So now we have 257 ministers that have gone through 2 years of apprenticeship and trainings. To awaken inside themselves their own ministry. It's called Ministry of Walking Prayer, and it's earth-based in its teachings. And so then during this basket was given to us in 1998, and so almost a decade went by where the church got started growing, our community was growing itself internationally, sitting on the East Coast here, sitting in, we have a sister community in Switzerland. We have a very large community of 20 years in outside of Prague. And until just a couple of years ago, we had a home in the Brazilian Amazon. That was the footprint of Kayumari. So this was all growing. And then we started all getting these messages and promptings about coming together in council. This resulted in us convening the International Council of 13 Indigenous Grandmothers. And there was much prophecy we didn't know then about 13. We were sent 16 names of grandmothers, and 13 accepted. And then we would later find out that there was many prophecies around the globe in different nations that talk about the time when the 13 grandmothers would come to shake the world awake. And so they did. So they did. And then a few years before they were about to fly and carry themselves in their own independence, then I was given the next seed, because I carry these seeds, and my job is to protect those seeds until they start to open themselves and offer their instruction about how to create the structure around them that will allow that full expression of the seed. And the mother said, if you're going to bring systemic change, you're going to have to restore the economic model, and it must be based on reciprocity and collaboration, guided by nature and the sacred. And I was I'm a woman of prayer, and I can pray, but I'm not an economist. So you do your little dance sometimes. It's just part of being human. But finally, it went into motion, and her timing again always blows me away. It's impeccable, her timing, because it took us 8.5 years to stand here with you now with the fountain. For natural order of our existence is its full name, is given by the Mamos out of Colombia. And they have sat on it, and that earth has instructed every step of our way in order to bring that restoration of economy, that original principled economy, into play. And of course, we're standing here now. We got there by listening to instruction. We got there when she gave us the instruction to build 13 houses of original thought, which are really, in these first 13, are really walking down the spine of the Eagle Condor prophecy line. At the same time, restoring sacred sites by small groups of our elders of about 11 from the Americas, being sent down certain ley lines to go to sacred sites, to do ceremony, to reactivate, to heal, to put things back in balance there. So this is happening at the same time, because those sacred sites are like our, you know, they're like our chakra systems inside. And we've sat things on them, and we've kept our original people from out away from them, so they can't take care of them. They can't help her breathe. So we've got to restore those sacred sites so the earth herself can breathe and restore her own esoteric body to help us move through this moment of birthing that we've been talking about. So it's, you know, when I realized this is coming like this, now we're sitting here and this pandemic came, and we are prepared. And the mother said, when the Mother Earth delegation came into form, she said, as I said, first you must declare your sovereignty, and then you must restore the original caretakers to my territories and step into my nation and follow this instruction. And that was the instruction. And so we're working really hard right now, and amazing people and organizations and movements are really in a high level of collaborative energy so that we can move quicker, because 80% of our sustained ecosystems are maintained by our indigenous people. And right now, under the cover, there's an energy that would like to go and extract those last elements out of the earth right there in those sustainable ecosystems. And when we do, the earth will have to have a reaction, and we will be caught by that consequence. So we want to move with that feminine, strategic, militaristic moment. And we want to bring about ways through our collaboration that we can protect these sacred sites and the original people and start that realignment of this planet. Yeah. And so that's what the fountain is very, very involved in right now. pandemic stopped everybody from moving around, but I've been 10-hour calls a day, 6 days a week in these kind of meetings and discussions. So I come back to report and to witness to you, there is a making. And she's giving us the instruction that will bring those vehicles that we can move into the next part of our story together with our compassion and with our heart and riding the unity and union kind of the unity current. That's the current we're all on. We're in a process of unification. It may feel like we're falling apart, but we're really falling together, falling into each other's arms.
I love that.
That possibility as well.
Yeah.
What do you want to dream into being? That's the question to ask yourself. What do you want to dream into being?
Well, I love that you said that. This has been the greatest interview because I don't feel like I've had to say much and it's just all flowed so perfectly. but I wanted to ask you this, you know, for kind of a final question, but I feel like we're already headed there of this. You painted such a beautiful vision of how this is all coming together. And you talked about the 13, I'm not sure exactly how you said that. Original houses of thought. Is that how you framed it?
Original houses of thought.
Yeah.
Houses of thought. That's what they're calling them.
And so
the earth is instructing us and there's a certain way they're built.
Got it.
And when they sit down on a sacred site space, they have an antenna at the top that connects into the heart of the earth, which is in the La Sierra Nevadas of Colombia. And where this instruction is coming from. And the house of original thought, when it sits down, and many of them have eternal fire, so once they're activated, a fire is begun that will last for eternity. It has to be kept 24/7 for the children and the next generations. And when it sits down, it first honors the people of that, the original people of the land it's sitting on. And then it honors the indigenous that have migrated for whatever reason to come together there as the keepers of the earth. And then it brings all nations to come and learn and to remember how again to live with nature's law.
Wow. Well, and so my question was, I feel like we could talk for 2 hours. There's so much that I would love to talk to you about, but there's the part of what came up for me is thinking about original peoples. And of course, if you think about the concept of whiteness that has really stripped away so many people, particularly those who are indigenous to Europe, of any kind of sense of connectedness back to an ancestral line. So the question was really, how do we, when I say we, me as a white identifying woman here of European descent, support those original people, and what's my role to play in all of this, both evolving and unraveling and creating. And you may have already answered it with what do you want to dream into being, but.
Well, that's certainly at the heart of it, isn't it? Mm-hmm. You know, it's a very beautiful question, and it's a point of study. The way my spiritual elders have taught me is that when I find a really good question like that one, then I need to sit down with it and open to the study, because there'll be many different aspects that it will show you and awaken in you or help you eliminate which doesn't align with it anymore, because it's done. It's a done teaching somehow. And so we're kind of right there holding your question like that. I want to see what the mother wants to say in response to you. And what I'm hearing, you know, is it's like, it's not about what can we do. It's about being, you know, the Yupik tell a story. And one of their stories and prophecies is that in the original times, the birds were all white. And then when we started to shift into some of these times we're ending now, the birds turned black. And they said during the years up till now, the Mother Earth has been growing her own self, her own consciousness. And so she's been downing these first 1, 2, 3 chakras. Those are the, some would call the hell zone. Some would call the place of learning survival, primal survival. And that's where we've been because we are a reflection of Mother Earth's development. And now she's about to leap into her heart, which is the first moment when we begin to do our ascension. And that ascension takes us further. So we know how to survive. We're here because of that. Now we have to make this huge leap into the heart. And they say that will be the first time, this way the Yupiks tell this story, the way I've heard it, through Grandmother Rita Lumenstein. She used to say that now we're going to learn how to become for the first time human beings, because we haven't been in our space of consciousness to activate our being in the word human being. So we're really right there right now. So the most important part any single one of us can do is to be like we talked about it the first of our hour, to really have the courage to be honest with what you're seeing. And sometimes it's painful to see that. Sometimes it's painful to recognize that I participated in something that hurt people. Sometimes it's hard to hold the power of who we are. We're just sometimes as scared of that as we are the other. It's really, can we step into a moment of courage so we can be compassionately accepting of what we see is here? So we can then allow ourselves to step back into that zero point and really receive the consciousness that runs up and down our family line from its root source to here and back again. That's how it generates itself forward. And when we allow ourselves to do that, then we really do arrive here and get what the study was about, what the path taught us, what we learned from this moment when the world went to sleep and things got hurt. They say that we're returning to the garden from which we came. And this time when we arrive in the garden, we will be conscious and know what we have and the value of it so we can care for it much more wisely and mindfully. So for me, that's the moment we're all in right now. As my grandmother's sister, Loretta Afraida Bear Cook, and her mom, she called me granddaughter, and she Beatrice, long visitor, Holy Dance. She died in her, she was an elder and a sun dancer, a wise woman from the Great Sioux Nation, from the Oglala Sioux. And she told us stories about, you know, that all colors are part of the sacred corn. Era prophecy, even with the Mayans talking about the black corn and the white corn and the red corn and the yellow corn, that and they're all part of the sacred garden. And that when we hold our palms up to each other, we're all the same color on our palms. And she goes on to tell a much more in-depth part of this story about how we see in many caves and many places that are sacred, that are very, very old, you'll see the handprints there.
Yes.
And handprints are about peace and unity amongst all people. And so we're in a moment of receiving and activating our beingness. So if we can operate out of our beingness, our doing will look very, very different. It's a moment when we can actively call the consciousness of forgiveness to sit with each and every one of us, to forgive ourselves, to forgive those that wronged us because of their unconsciousness, to forgive whatever might need that consciousness to seep into it and fill it up so it can release us from old wounds and stories that no longer serve us and allow us to move through this dynamic moment of collaborative embrace of our diversity and allow ourselves to flourish. Huh? So I don't know much. I just know that, again, is it a hard moment? Yes. Is it challenging? Yes. I will have to let go and let God a lot.
Yeah.
In order, as the Hopi say, you know, there's a river moving. It's the river of life. And they say we've come to the place where we have to let go of the edge of the river. And when the river's force is moving us all, carrying us down, where it's going to take us next, we don't know. But when we look around, we see we are amongst friends. And we know each other. And right now, that's what we're doing. If anyone's listening to this and you and I talking like this, it's because we know each other. And we declared when we were without our skin on that we were going to be a soul group that was going to meet down here and be present for the making moment. So I'm glad to see you again.
I'm so glad to see you too. And I absolutely love that there was a little bell right as you said that. How very perfect. Like the vibration of sound confirming this deep truth. Wow. Oh, Jyoti, this has been my pleasure. My heart is so full. I'm deeply grateful for your time. And I thank you so much for being with us today.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me. I'm humbled that you thought of me that way. And, we're waking a dream and a dream is waking us. Let's fill it with joy.
Yes, to a beautiful, beautiful dream. And I will make sure that I put information to, Jyoti's got a couple of different websites. You can learn a lot more about her work online. So I'll make sure I put that information in the show notes today. And I think all of you, as always, for listening. And, you know, if you like this show, you can do me a favor. You can tell somebody about it. You could give it a 5-star review on iTunes. You could subscribe. You can do all of those things. And until next time, thank you so much for being with us.
Be the dream.
Home to Her is hosted by me, Liz Kelly. You can visit me online at hometoher.com. where you can find show notes and other episodes, you can read articles about the Sacred Feminine, and you'll also find a link to join the Home to Her Facebook group for lots more discussion and exploration of her. You can also follow me on Instagram at Home to Her to keep up to date with the latest episodes. Thanks so much for joining us, and we'll see you back here soon.